Coaches, welcome to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. Thanks again for joining us as we're in the middle of March Madness, and we're going to talk some March Madness, how to be a great assistant coach, difference between Division I, Division II. We're going to hit a bunch of topics with Kyan Brown on the podcast. Before we get to him, I want to thank our sponsor, Dr. Dish. As you know, I'm a loyal Dr. Dish customer, and they've been promoting the podcast and our coaching clinics for the last 5 or 6 years. So if you want your players to get an efficient workout in the mornings in 25 to 30 minutes, the Dr. Dish is the way to go. Mention the podcast and receive $300 off the dish of your choice. Now, let's get to our guest. Coach, thanks for joining us.
No, Matthew, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure. When I got the message, I was excited to jump on here.
Yeah, we love having coaches from all different levels, men's, women's, pros, high school, middle school. We've had them all on to talk just different things about life and basketball, leadership, culture, and your coaching resume and playing resume is quite extensive. So you've been at different levels. But before we hit that, I know you and your coaching buddies and me and my coaching buddies have just been watching March Madness nonstop. We love it for the upsets, but never have I witnessed so many upsets in my life. What are your thoughts as you watch March Madness and you're also in the, you know, college coaching ranks?
I mean, this year is just absolutely nuts. I mean, I think I heard the other day, this is the first time a number one seed has not been in the Final Four. And then just with the field that you have out there right now, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, credit to all the great coaches out there that are making it right there from even the smaller, like the Dusty made from FAU and all those guys right there. I mean, it's credit to those guys, but this is just really unheard of. And the parity in college athletics right now is something we've never seen before. So it's just a lot of really cool things happening right now. And so just see like teams like Florida Atlantic in the tournament right now in the Final Four right there. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's going to be fun to watch. They're a good team. Yeah.
I don't think there's a 1, 2, or 3 seed in the tournament. I think it's what, 2 5s, a 4, and a 9, if I'm correct on that.
And Texas was the last one to be a number two, and they got out the other day.
Yeah. So Texas had a good shot there. I couldn't believe that they wound up losing that game. So as we mentioned parity, or you mentioned parity, do you think with NILs and the transfer portal, like this will just be the new normal? Because you look at some of these teams, even the women's game as well, some of these coaches essentially replaced 3/4 of their roster with experienced guys who had Division One level. So do you think this is going to be the new norm, or things will settle back down to where it used to be?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question. As you talk about it in college coaching, we've always talked about you want to get old and you want to stay old. You know, you want older guys in college basketball. That's going to help you kind of propel for the next level. I know there's been a lot of studies out there, a lot of surveys. People have crunched the numbers. They're a lot smarter than me, but I think they did like the top freshmen, incoming freshmen in the country that were all McDonald's All-Americans, and they did the top portal transfer guys. And like the portal guys are just averaging so much more points and so much more productivity than the incoming freshmen now. So you see high majors starting to make that jump. K-State is a prime example. Jerome Tang did an unbelievable job this year. He went out and hit the portal. He got the Johnson kid from Florida, had the heart issue, and a couple other cats. And I mean, what he's done with that program in the span of just 1 year is something remarkable. So I think this is a sign of things to come, because as you look at it right now, like the NIL deals and the one-time transfer works both ways. Now some high major kids that aren't getting the love they want at the high major level are now dropping down a level and they're getting more opportunities. So maybe that's even the playing field a little bit right there. And there's so when you get time to come to March Madness, when you're playing on neutral events, neutral floors, anything can happen. And we're seeing that now more than ever.
Yeah. You mentioned a good point when you brought up McDonald's All-Americans. And again, if I'm wrong, someone can fact check me, but I think there's no McDonald's All-Americans in this Final Four.
I don't think there is.
And you know what I see, and I coach, you know, here in Northwest Georgia, and I'm not coaching any high level D1 kids. I mean, I've had some kids go the JUCO route and Division II, things like that. But when I talk to my coaching friends around the country, I'm speaking with you now, and I ask them, hey, what are you doing now the season's over? They say, I spend all day on the transfer portal. So it's really, you know, tough for a high school kid to get recruited like they did before, because when I can get a guy like Coach Tang did at K-State, and he gets a guy who already has 25 to 50 high-level games under his belt, they can come in and not deal with that freshman slump or redshirting anyone. I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, the high school kids? Are, I don't want to say they're getting hurt. They're playing college basketball, but it may not be where they would have played 3 years ago.
I think one of the biggest things is, in all to allude to what you're kind of talking about, is times are changing. You know, it's like either we are going to complain about the old days and then we wish it would have been this way and we wish it would have gone, you know, or we're going to get on board with what's going to happen out there. I don't know if it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but it seems like there's two sides to go with it right there. You saw people like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams, and who have had unbelievable success, greatest coaches in college basketball, who have kind of said a little bit on their way out that I don't really want to deal with this portal thing. I don't want to do this. This isn't NIL deal. It's not really for us. We're moving on. But then you have a guy like Jim Larrañaga, who's 73 years old, who embraced the change, went out there, and he was one of the guys that was in the headlines last year because it leaked out that one of their players is getting around $400,000 on the new NIL deal. He embraced it. Now he's in his first final, not first Final Four, but Miami's first Final Four. It kind of alludes to the same thing that you talked about with high school recruiting. Like, I really do think high school kids are kind of getting the short end of the stick on this deal. I mean, they're going to get overlooked, and there'll be programs out there that will need that, and they will reap the benefits on, because they'll go get a kid that they couldn't get years ago in the high school level. You know, for us at Omaha, right here, we're a smaller team, but I think we went and got a few kids that we possibly couldn't have got on another year that were freshmen this year. Now, we almost doubled our win total. We were at 9 wins this year, which isn't anywhere we want to be, but we almost doubled the win total than the year before in a first-year program. But, yeah, I see both sides of it. I think people need to embrace with what's happening. I think kids need to be educated. You know, high school kids probably need to look to start signing earlier instead of dragging out the process, because when that spring hits and these coaching changes start happening, that's when you're going to see teams, and it's nothing for a team to go out and need 8, 9, 10 scholarships in the spring, which is absurd, right? But they're not going to get a lot of high school kids if they want to rebuild it and flip it quick.
So I want to make sure I'm clear on this. The rule is you get a one-time transfer where you don't have to sit out.
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
That wasn't – so if you want to transfer again, you have to sit out a year.
Well
– if you stay within the D1 ranks.
No, they're cracking down on all this stuff. Now, just 2 weeks ago, the NCAA sent out another deal talking about that, because no one's kind of really figured it out. So last year at this time, the rule was in place. You had the one-time transfer rule. You could transfer one time. That was it. Well, kids were transferring twice and doing some stuff like that. Well, then they had a – just last year, they did a runoff waiver, which means if I'm coaching Johnny and Johnny's already transferred once and but Johnny wants to leave again and another school's recruiting him, all I have to do is say, I run Johnny off, send it there, and he'd be eligible right away again. The NCAA just came out with an email coming back to everyone saying that will no longer be accepted. You cannot run a person off anymore, because they're also saying that if I take a transfer, if I take Johnny on the transfer and he's got 3 years left of eligibility, I'm on the hook for those 3 years, whether he plays or not. Johnny could come to school. Johnny could be on the team. If Johnny doesn't want to play anymore, I still have to pay for his 3 years of college education. So they're trying to make it harder for some teams to take transfers, but I don't think that's happening out there looking at the numbers.
Yeah, it's a unique time for sure. And you guys in college basketball are getting probably emails and updates on a weekly basis or how things are changing. And then I was also reading this, that I think I used the word payroll loosely, but I think Miami's NIL was $2.2 million for the squad they've got now, and one player was getting $800,000. I think he's getting $800,000 next year. I can't remember his name, including a car. And so, you know, this is where, again, I'll watch college basketball no matter what. But I think to the casual fan, I think you might lose some casual fans, yep. because, you know, they don't want it. Again, I talk to coaches and they're torn on, you know, off the record about if players should get paid or not, or should there be a cap or whatnot. But I think the casual fan doesn't want to see the team getting $2 million unless it's their team.
Right.
Like, yeah, if it's Georgia football, then man, let's make it $10 million. I don't care. Let's just keep getting rings, right? But you know, you might have a player can make more than the coach.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's
that may be happening.
Oh, I think it's definitely going that direction. I mean, now there's the haves and the have-nots right there. But you kind of see it right here. Okay, this is NIL's what, second, third year into the NIL deal right here? And look at our Final Four. I mean, some of the best teams of the NIL deal are the Blue Bloods, which is the Kansases, the Kentuckys. Those teams right there have the most money, have the biggest boosters, have the biggest NIL deals right there. You know, and they're not in the Final Four. Now, Miami did embrace it. They jumped there in the Final Four, but the other teams, not so much. I mean, so it works both ways. A lot of parity, but it's you're right. I can see the casual fan kind of getting like, well, now it's just a business. There's no longer love of the game.
Well, or we could say, hey, some guys were getting paid before. At least they're doing it
now. Oh, you know that.
At least they're doing it now legally. They don't have to worry about the, Tennessee – McDonald's bags of cash, or the Georgia, the Chick-fil-A bags of cash, or whatever it was. So again, people were always getting money in some way, shape, or form. But now, man, 800,000,
it's out there
that you can get. And I mean, you look at football and other sports. I think, you know, like the Miami offensive line all got $30,000 or $40,000 a piece from the company Built Bar. So now, instead of the star quarterback getting everything, or the star running back, or the star pitcher, or whatever it may be, now you're saying, okay, now we're going to reward the whole defensive line, the whole offensive line. Yeah. There's pros and cons around it. I think that they started the wild, wild west before they, you know, put some parameters on this, and now trying to rein it back in might be a little difficult, but that's why the NCAA is there, right?
They got a big task ahead of them right there, and everyone wanted the pay for play. And I get it. You know, kids want their share of the pie, and, you know, that's fine. That's the way we're going. But, you know, I think it's BYU that a big booster stepped up, and now they're like, their walk-ons are all on scholarship. And so now they don't really have a limit of scholarships. So it's like, and I'm 90% sure it's BYU, but it's like someone goes, you know what, if you want, the NCAA allows men's basketball to have 13 full-ride scholarships. You're not allowed to break that up at Division I. So BYU can now have the potential to go out and get unlimited amount of guys to come on there on scholarship and just strengthen their roster. So now they can get, so they want to get transfer portal. And they want to get 13 guys in the transfer portal. Well, now they can also bring in four freshmen that they want to develop, bring those guys up if kids are picking up these days, and kind of do it both ways. So there's a lot of loopholes. I know this, there's a lot of coaches out there that are looking at those loopholes. How do we benefit our program? How do we work this to our advantage? They're having daily meetings on it. And I'm telling you, there's just enough money out there getting thrown around that the craziness has happened.
Well, I'm kind of glad we have a Final Four. Obviously, UConn's there. I like Larinaga from Miami. But I think it's good to have a couple of teams that you never would have thought of. What is FAU there? Are they in the what conference are they in? Conference USA? Is that what they're in
right
USA, now?
Yep.
And they're, leaving
Texas,
it?
Yep. Conference USA, North Texas and UAB's in the NIT as well. There's like three Conference USA teams in that thing.
Yeah.
Still playing out of eight.
That's a tough league. I mean, and a very tough league. I know they're adding Liberty next year. The year after that, Kennesaw State's coming in.
Yep.
I know FAU's leaving, and then obviously San Diego State. They've been really successful for a long time when Fisher took over. And
Mountain West team, great program out there.
Yep. It's going to be exciting for sure. So, well, let's talk about your journey a little bit. Talk about, you know, how you got into coaching. And I know you've coached a couple of different levels. We want to talk about the difference from the different levels you've been. But what led you to where you are today? You're in Omaha. I've been to Omaha once in my life, actually.
Come on great, up. I got you.
You know, the thing about Omaha, and this is funny, it's college. I was dating a girl in Omaha. And, man, my Southern accent is not that strong. Okay.
You know what, Coach? I lived in Arkansas for a while. You got a little good one on you.
I do. I do have a decent one. But wait, if you heard my family talk about, good Lord, is this the Beverly Hillbillies? But I mean, I just know I got such a hard time about my accent. I think they were wondering, can this guy even read? Like, we're struggling with. You can't bring some Southern boy to Omaha. Obviously, it didn't last. But anyway, so talk about what led you to where you are today. I know you've been at Oral Roberts. You've been at in Arkansas. Just talk about your journey a little bit. Coaches, I want to talk to you for just a second about why you should seriously consider getting a Dr. Dish. First of all, their payment plan system is unreal. 12 months, no interest. I paid half up front, and then I paid the other half over the next 365 days, and I have a brand new Dr. Dish CT. On top of that, it's just the best shooting machine out there. The CT is so user-friendly, as are all their shooting machines. So reach out to Dr. Dish. Tell them you heard about them on the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast and receive a discount. You won't regret it. Your players will get better. They'll get shots up, more reps up, and you'll become a better basketball team. Reach out to Dr. Dish. Follow them on all social media at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Now back to our guest.
Yeah, Matthew, I've been all over, man. It's a crazy kind of deal. There's five people in my family. We're all born in different states. I'm from Alaska. My wife's from Pennsylvania. We met in college at Oral Roberts University, where I played my college basketball. I knew I wasn't a pro when I couldn't jump over a phone book. So I didn't have any grand, you know, visions of me playing the NBA or getting a lot of money. I knew my kind of limitations, and this game has just meant so much to me. I loved it so much. I love playing it. I love being around it. When I was finishing up my last year at ORU, I actually coached a freshman boys basketball team in Metro Christian, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Kind of fell in love with coaching. I went to work for Doc Sadler at Fort Smith, which was then a junior college. Now it's a Division II school. So I went to work for Doc Sadler at Fort Smith for 2 years. Then I worked for Barry Hinson at 4 years at Missouri State University. And that's back when, you know, us old heads would call the Valley, when it was the real Valley, when you had Wichita State, you had Creighton, and it was getting a four-bid league at one point in back when I was in it. Then I went back to my alma mater with Scott Sutton at Oral Roberts University. And then I went to North Dakota State for 6 years with Dave Richmond. Went to two NCAA tournaments and probably about 6 points away from going to four straight NCAA tournaments. Was the associate head coach up there. And then a good friend of mine, a guy that I trust, a guy that I know named Chris Crutchfield, made a call to me this last spring and said, "Hey, why don't you come be my associate head at Omaha?" It's in the same league, but they had won 5 games, but just because I believed in his passion, his vision. And I think Omaha is a sleeping giant that, you know, it was a no brainer for me and my family to jump up and move to Omaha. So we've been all over, coached at different levels, been in the Summit League for a long time now. And I've loved every second of it. For me, it's about the people. I love coaching, love impacting young men's lives. I love, you know, seeing them grow. I think it's a really cool time. And for a coach, especially a college basketball coach, you're kind of getting kids that are getting out of the nest for the first time, and you're impacting them in a very important part of their life where they're leaving home for the first time and they're not planning on going back. So you're trying to really guide these kids and try to help them, give good advice and watch them grow up to become not young, from boys to men. ABC, BBD. Oh, sorry. That was a little too.
Wow. I mean, you know, earlier in the podcast, when you talked about these times are changing, I'm like, man, if I could cue some Bob Dylan right now.
Exactly.
We might just crush this podcast. Hey, what you, so when you were at Arkansas Fort Smith, you said it was JUCO then, right?
It was. Yep.
Okay, what's it like coaching in JUCO? Because I know everybody's watching, you know, these Netflix series, and everybody talks about how JUCO coaching so hard and the kids. What was your experience like with junior college coaching?
I had an absolute blast. I played junior college basketball for 1 year, too. So I played junior college basketball for 1 year, and then I came back and I coached it for two. And back then, it might have been a little different just because the rules and stuff like that. Like, we had really talented kids that should have been probably Division One at the Division One level, but academics were a lot tighter back then with ACT scores, core GPAs, all those different things. So a lot of kids that didn't do well in high school early that were definitely athletically gifted enough to be Division One players were in junior college. So there is some wild stories. I could tell you some stuff that can't definitely go on air. But it was a lot of fun. Is a different type of basketball. It was more up and down, more quick paced, more holy gully. You only get kids for 2 years instead of four, so you don't really get to see the full maturation process as they go through it. You have to deal with Division I coaches coming in your gym all the time. You get to see the recruiting aspect from a different side, you know, where you're getting – your coaching kids are getting recruited in junior college and how they do it and how they intermingle. And so it was, for me, it was a great avenue, not only one to coach kids and help them out, but also to see how kind of the game of basketball was made. And by made, you kind of like, you know, it says, oh, you don't like the sausage until you see how it's made. Like, you can kind of see how in junior college basketball and year round recruiting, all those different things, just you can kind of see how, some stuff going on.
Well, it seems like the days are long. You probably aren't traveling under the best circumstances. You know, you're probably not flying charters. You may have some kids who couldn't quite cut it academically at other schools potentially, and you're trying to help these guys keep their grades up and graduate. So, I mean, you want them to go to a D1 school. You want these guys to be successful, and they're trying to use you to be that kind of stepping stone to get to the next level as well and keep on playing.
Yeah, a lot of these kids had never had like academic guidance. They just kind of been pushed along because of their ability, and they hadn't been held accountable for a lot of different things. I can remember one kid we brought in, I'll leave his name out for the record, but we brought in him on a visit, and we had to go drop him off for a placement math test. And it didn't determine whether he gets in school or not. It was just to take a quick little 30-40 minute math placement test to kind of figure out where he'd be when he gets to school there. And we get a call an hour later. We're like, what's taking this kid so long? And the teacher that's giving the test goes, hey, you might want to come get this guy. He fell asleep during the test. It's like, what the heck? How do you fall asleep? I mean, you just didn't care about it. Like, it didn't matter, like, the deal. And you're taking vans everywhere. You're staying in bad hotels when you do stay in hotels. I mean, and you're going to small gyms and small crowds. But the fire and the passion, one of the best basketball games I've ever seen, hands down, been a part of, was when I was at Fort Smith and we played Redlands in the conference tournament. And there was probably about 300 people in the gym. Both teams hated each other. No one shook hands before the game. Both head coaches hated each other. They came out. No one dapped anybody up. Bodies were getting tackled left and right. We lost by about 5 to 7 points. And it was rocking loud. Billy Tubbs was sitting in the front row across there, and he told our head coach, that's a top 7 basketball game I've ever witnessed. And Billy Tubbs has been around a long time. It was really high-level basketball with some good athletes on the floor. So a lot of great experiences that I've had from junior college and that I cherish.
And from there, what was your next stop? Missouri State?
Yeah, so my old coach, Barry Henson, he got the job. He coached me at ORU. He got the job at Missouri State and called in. He said, I got an operations spot coming open. I'd like you to come up here and take it. And my JUCO coach at the time, the guy I worked for, said, it's you got to do it. You got to take it. It's a no-brainer. Get to the Division I level, stay at the Division I level. And so I took it, and Barry told me, he goes, hey, listen, just so you know, I don't bump up my operations guys. I don't do it. Like, you're going to be an operations guy. You're going to be an operations guy. That's what you're going to be. I'm like, all right. 1 year later, I was a full-time assistant in the Missouri Valley. And just timing worked out great. And here's the funny part for all these up-and-coming coaches right here. Like, I'm 25, 26 years old at the time. I'm a Division I assistant in the Missouri Valley Conference with Creighton and Wichita State in there. In my mind, I'm going, I've made it. I'm there. It's all skyrockets from here. I can't wait. And then we had some really good teams. We were 19 RPI 1 year when the Valley got four teams in the league. Everyone's telling us we're in. CBS comes to our watch show. They got the camera on. They're waiting for our name to get called. And we're one of the only teams that didn't get called, and our heads just drop. And we're just – so I've been on that side, too, where you just feel that there's the heartbreak of not making the tournament. And it ultimately costs us our job because we didn't make the tournament. And so then you go to ORU from there and do those things. But it's been a wild ride. It's been a crazy journey, and it's just been a lot of fun, Matthew.
Well, it sounds like you've had some great experiences, and it's probably benefited you – that you've coached at all levels, because some coaches after their playing career, or they're an ops guy at a D1, like, they stay at that level. They play D1 level, they stay at that level. And you went back to the JUCO level, to Missouri State, and then Oral Roberts, correct?
When I actually played at ORU too, and back then I went high school for 1 year, JUCO for two, Missouri State for four, and then went back to ORU. So I was gone for a little while, but a lot of very similar teams. It was a summer league when I went back to coach there. And, you know, coaching at that level, even then, was like you had to play four or five guaranteed games, which basically means schools are paying you to come and play. So your non-conference is really tough. So our goal every year at ORU was to be around 500 non-conference and then get hot in the conference tournament and go to the NCAA, because it's a one-bid league. And our first year there, I think we lost the last home game of the year to North Dakota State to go to the NCAA tournament. And crazy. Ben Woodside played Kansas in the tournament, and they did a great job. We played in the championship game twice, didn't make it. When we were there, had really good teams. And then at the end, I just figured it was time for a change. And then I went to North Dakota State because a good buddy of mine got the head job up there at North Dakota State, Dave Richmond, and made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
And this is your second year at Omaha, correct?
First year.
First year. And you said, and because of you, they doubled in wins.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say because of me.
I'm kidding.
This is a new side of it for me. Like, even at 40 something years old, like without giving the real age, but I just turned 44.
And he's got a great head full of hair, man. Look good, man.
My wife, I credit her. She keeps me going, man. So, I got a preceding hairline. It's growing down my face. You won't be able to see my eyes here in a couple of years. This is my first time ever joining a staff that's kind of a rebuild project where you're coming in, you're brand new staff, brand new players, brand new, even the guys returning are new, and you're coming off you're taking over a team that won 5 games the year before and 5 games the year before that. And it was hard. You know, winning 9 games is not easy. I've never been a part of a team that won 9 games. But our vision before, and I say our vision, it was mostly Coach Crutchfield's vision, was we had two options, right? He was a high major assistant. We could have went out and hit the transfer portal. And he actually played at Omaha a long time ago. And he goes, KB, I want to do this right. I want to get good kids. We'll eventually hit the portal. He's like, but I want to build a foundation here. And I want kids I don't want to come in here and just throw a band-aid on this thing and try to jump out of here. I want to build something special. And so we brought in a couple high school kids. We brought in a couple qualifiers that were in junior college that had 3 years of eligibility left. And we were the youngest team. We were the ninth youngest team in NCAA last year. And so, we're returning all the key pieces we have. Now, you fast forward to this to just crunching numbers, right? Which is funny. So we're the ninth youngest team in Division I, and ORU starting five is older than the starting five for the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Oklahoma City Thunder's starting age, their starting five is 21.6 out of the starting five. ORU's starting age this year was 22.5. So it's just like, get old, stay old. Well, now.
I think that for Coach Crutchfield, that also shows to me that he has support from the administration to do it right and take his time instead of like, you've got to fix this in 1 or 2 years, because the route he's taken over time, when he builds that foundation of culture and how we want to do things, will probably pay off maybe much greater, but he's taking the slow route. Would you say that he feels the support of the administration and the school to do that?
It really is. It's been really fun. We have an unbelievable athletic director in Adrian Dow, and our president, our chancellor here, Chancellor Lee, they see the vision. And now I wish I could say we knew this kind of going into it, but we kind of saw this at the end was, I don't know. You kept up with Kennesaw this year a little bit, right?
Yep. Kennesaw, I went to a couple. I went to some games there. They're right down the road from me.
Yep. So Kennesaw, and we're not taking credit for this, but at the very end of the year, a couple weeks after the end of the year, the tournament start, our athletic director sends me and Coach Crutchfield, myself, an article on them. And basically, he won one game his first year. I think the next year, he won like 3 or 4. The year after that, they took a little jump. And then this year, he made a big, big jump, but he did it with retention, keeping guys around, building a program, and then plugging some holes in between. I'm not saying we knew that vision starting off, but that's our AD goes, I see it. I get it. This program has had success doing it. Keep it up, guys. And so, we're big in character. Coach Crutchfield is huge in getting high character young men. We want to sleep on the weekends. We don't want to be nervous about what our kids are doing. You know, and so we've got a really good group of guys. We went through a 9-game losing streak this year, and if you came to our practice, you would never know it. Our guys were upbeat, intense, focused every day. They're just young, and so we got to keep those guys and keep building it.
Yeah, there's a big difference between throwing, you know, 18, 19-year-old guys out there versus some teams, like you said, their average age is in their early 20s, 21, 22, just from a physicality perspective. Mentally, physically, just experience. Well, let's talk about, I want to talk to you about the character or the qualities you believe it takes to be a good assistant coach. because you've worked your way up the ladder, assistant coach. You were told you'd be an ops guy forever. You'd be 30 years in basketball, but you'd be the ops guy still, right? If you were still there, but you obviously broke the mold there. So, what do you, in your opinion, as you are a very seasoned assistant coach, what's tough about the job? What's easy about the job, if there is anything? And then what character traits, you know, so if you're a head coach one day, what qualities will you look for? I know I just threw a ton at you, but, you know,
I like
you're a bright guy, you're mid-40s, you can handle it.
The best advice I'd ever received about becoming an assistant coach was from Doc Sadler. And Doc Sadler was the head coach of Nebraska, Southern Miss. He worked at Kansas. He's been around a long time. He's a mentor of mine. I played for Doc. I talked to him on the weekly. I was going to take an assistant job at Missouri State, or the operations guy, but be an assistant. And Doc said, "Kind, don't forget this. Like, your time will eventually come where you're going to be a head coach." I don't know if he saw that in me or not, but he's being real nice. Anyway, but he said, while you're an assistant coach, remember this. The first word of that is assistant. Your job is to assist the head coach. It might not line up to your vision, to what you see, to what you do, and all those different types of things, and how you would run your program. But your job is to assist him, see problems that might arise before it gets to his desk, and make his life easier. And I've always kind of taken that approach with just I'm an assistant coach, because eventually, if the good Lord's willing and bless me one day to be a head coach, I want to hire guys like this. Like, it might not line up in my vision or how I see the program, but I try to look at it in my boss's shoes. Like, what does he want? What is his vision? Who does he want to recruit? How does he want kids to be active, you know, taught on a daily basis? You know, all those different things. You know, can I get a hold ahead of an academic issue before he gets his table? How can I make his life easier? And then always have my phone on me and just literally trying to assist him as he takes the reign of a program. And that's just always kind of stuck with me. And it's made a lot of sense. And I think it's kind of paid off for the way I've kind of moved up a little bit. I've always been promoted, and I'm not a high major guy, but I just really like helping people out. And I think when you take that approach as an assistant coach, that it's not about you, but it's about your boss and his vision. I think that really helps, and it shows, because ultimately you're tied to him. And I'm a big believer in a rising tide raises all ships. So if you're, you know, if everyone's winning, if he's winning, you're winning, because you're on his coattails right there. So, and then just tie yourself to try to be around good people. Like, if I'm ever around a jerk that's cheating and all stuff, I'm probably just going to walk away. And I've been fortunate where I've never been around that situation, but I've been around good people that I think do it the right way, that care about kids and do all those things. So if I'm giving advice to, you know, young assistant coaches out there, like, assist, really help that head coach try to see his vision, try to see what he wants for his program, then help him get that direction without as many obstacles, where he can focus on coaching.
And under the head coaches you've been, I'm assuming they've used you in different roles, right? Yep. What are some of the different roles that you've been a part of that, you know, you maybe at the JUCO level you were here, then at Oral Roberts, or, you know, Missouri State, or that, what were some of the growing, not pains, but some of the growing moments for you in your career?
You know, when you're young, Matthew, you know, you think you kind of got it all figured out. And I played Division I basketball, and I had no idea what coaching was like. I literally thought my coaches showed up at practice and they got after it.
They were working 2 hours a day.
Yeah, and then they left, and it was, you know, it was all sunshine.
Playing 36 holes of golf.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it's the best job in the world. Why would anyone? Right.
Then you realize they don't see their families much. They travel. They're on their probably cell phone not as much back then. But, yeah, like, you've got to be accessible 24/7 essentially.
My wife loves posting pictures of me when we're on family walks or doing whatever, and I got my phone to my ear, and she loves posting that stuff because – it's not just you, right? And that's probably something else we could get down another rabbit hole, is finding the correct spouse to be around that. And because it really is, it's a lifestyle. It is not a job. It is not a 9-to-5. If you want to coach college basketball and you just want to work 9-to-5, you better go do something else, because it is a lifestyle where you're constantly calling kids, calling coaches. Your phone could ring right now at 10 o'clock at night. You got to take it. You got to figure it out. And so to have a good woman that I'm very blessed to have next to me is very, very, very key. So it's just it's a unique grind. Another great piece of advice I heard was from my father a long time ago was, if someone asks you your opinion, give it. You know, don't just throw it out there. Don't just, you know, no one asks for it. You can just throw an opinion all over. But I keep going back to Doc Sadler, where I was 22 years old. It was my first job. I was a volunteer at Fort Smith, Arkansas. I wasn't making any money. The only thing he promised me was a cubicle and an opportunity. And he told me if I take the job that I got to work like I'm making $40,000 a year. It's like, you got to show up every day. Like, this isn't just, so I'm getting $0 to show up every day. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know, he would always ask my opinion in a staff meeting with the guys that were seasoned vets and all stuff. And he would listen. I got to tell a quick story, cause this is just too good not to share. My dad was a self-made guy. Like he built his own construction company in Ketchikan, Alaska. Like he came from nothing. We lived in a trailer growing up, and he built up his own little empire up there and did pretty well for himself. And I called him when I was going to get my first job at junior college. I was called him and I went to go meet Doc Sadler, and I went to go get a job at junior college, cause I was told, getting there, that's how you're going to get the Division I program. You're going to do all this stuff. And Doc interviews me, and I played for Doc. He's kind. I want you. I want you on my staff. I got a spot for you. I want to be here for you. Here's the problem. I got zero money for you. I got $0. And I'm like, wow, that's not very much. He goes, but I'll give you the keys to the gym. You can work out people on the side. You can do different side hustles. And he goes, but if you take this job, I want you to work like you're getting $40,000 a year. So you got to show up every day at 8 o'clock, and you got to stay up, you know. And I'm like, so I go to call my dad, and I call my dad, and I'm like, hey, pops, like, I'm going to take this job. He's like, all right, cool. That's awesome. Working with Doc, it's going to be great. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, what's it pay? I said, nothing. And he goes, Kyan, he's trying to explain. He's like, your time is worth something. I don't think that's how this business works. Like, you got to pay your dues early. You got to get in there, and you got to grind, and you got to show them that you're in it. And he goes, no, Kyan, you don't understand. Like, your time is worth something. Like, if you're going to show up every day, you got to get paid something. I'm like, I'll be able to do lessons at night. And we go back in this argument for 20 minutes. And I finally said, Dad, I'm taking the job. I would appreciate your support if you're going to give it to me, but I'm going to figure it out. 2 years later, I'm at Missouri State University after a game. And I'm hearing my dad overtell some other person that's getting the business, like, yeah, you know, this job's unique. It's really kind of weird. You got to pay your dues. You got to really get in. And sometimes you might not get paid anything. And I'm like, God, dog, Dad. I mean,
you got to grind it out. You know, grind, what I hear.
He was saying the exact same thing at the time. Yeah. Like, so
that's good. That's a good story. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people in coaching, and, you know, I remember just helping out my first couple of years as a student assistant. And I got a warm-up suit. And then the first year I helped with a high school, I got a $15 gift card to Applebee's. That's it. And then the next, and so again, I mean, you're, so at some point in coaching, you have to be willing to, grind it out if you really want to do it, whether it's at the high school level for $1,000 or you working, you're probably putting in 60-hour weeks plus stuff on the side to try to make ends meet, whatever you were doing back then. Right.
Oh, that's crazy. Yep.
So it's not cut out for everyone. And I don't think that people hear enough stories about, hey, you may get to where you want to be, but it may be a decade. It may be 10 years. So you be partnered with the right person, spouse, family, support systems that are going to stick with you. Because there can be some dark times, right? For sure, especially when you're sitting there at Missouri State waiting for your name to be called. They don't call your name, and man, just everyone's deflated, and you've got to be there to kind of pick up the players and support them through that. Well, Coach, before we get out of here, and hey, thanks a lot for doing this. This has been a fun conversation.
Oh, Matthew, thank you for having me. This has been great.
No, you're good. You have a good personality, man. We need to do this like every 6 months.
Fire it up. Let's go. I'm in.
Let's do it. And I'm not going to pay you anything. You got to grind it out.
I love conversation. I love people. So let's do it.
Okay. This will probably post before the Final Four or right after. Who's your pick? Who are you going
to? UConn.
Yeah, UConn.
That's the only one I got right in my Final Four. And my buddy coaches at Creighton. So I've been following the Big East a little bit, and UConn's just dynamic. They got great pieces.
What they did at Gonzaga was unbelievable. I mean, you know, most of the games were tight. Miami, Texas, going back and forth. I mean, the San Diego State game, but then at least that one, I went to bed early because that was a wrap early. And I hope, and I really hope Few wins a championship. I really do.
Me too.
I want him to win one. But, you know, the window is going to be closing on them. And, you know, how many more years does he have in it? And, well, I always thought about how many jobs has he turned down?
Oh, a bunch.
I mean, probably every year, or to the point where people, if they're even calling him now, because they just know that he likes that lifestyle. That I read a good article about how he likes his hikes alone. Like, he likes being kind of out in the country up there. And, you know, and he's well compensated. That's not like he's not well compensated.
Yep.
But a lot of people would have jumped for the ACC, SEC, Power Five job and all that comes along with that. But he's a good example of you stay here. Well, they got 3,000 students, 3,500 students.
Smaller deal, Jesuit school right there. And we played there about three or four times. At least I've been a part of teams that have been up there like three or four times. And it is a awesome little niche. I mean, it's like you said, it's not a Duke, it's not a Kentucky, it's not, but it is a really, really cool deal where basketball is such a special thing up there in Gonzaga, and he's done a great job, and I don't think he's gonna leave.
Well, if he hasn't left by now, I would. Or he's like, hey, we're gonna do this here. We're gonna do this here. I mean, I heard. I mean, who am I hearing stuff from? Let's be real. I mean, who am I? You know, the hashtags.
it's out there, baby, on Twitterverse.
No one's reaching out to me. But Carolina had contacted him in the past. I think after Roy left, and just want to start the conversation. But again, my inside information is insane. I mean, like, I'm hearing stuff that no one else is hearing.
Well, I've been doing this 20 years, over 20 years. And God, how long was it? 3 or 4 years ago? I can't remember the guy, the big kid they had from Japan. Anyway, it was by far the best team I'd ever scouted. And we played North Carolina when they won the national championship with Tyler Hansbrough. But that year, they were just coming back from Honolulu. They had just beat Duke, I think, out there. Or I think it was Duke to take the number one. They were the number one voted team in America coming back to Gonzaga. And they were top to bottom. I was like, this team's going to win it all. It's the best team I've ever scouted. And they didn't. They got upset by Texas Tech and Chris Beard. But I thought they were going to win it all because that was an unbelievable team he had. So I mean, he can get players up there. Can they get over the hump? It's hard to win one.
Do you think, again, it's obviously we're just firing shots in the wind here, but do you think their overall strength of schedule hurts them? Now, they play some powers, but their league play, you know, obviously isn't going to be like an SEC or a Big 12 or anyone like that. Do you think that if they went to a bigger conference, that could help them overall to see really tough teams night in and night out?
You know, I think they're going to give and they're going to take a little bit, because one thing he does do is he goes out and plays really tough teams in non-conference because he knows he kind of has to, right? Then when conference hits, you know, Santa Clara's tried to build it up a little bit. San Francisco had it going for a little while. Bennett's done an unbelievable job at St. Mary's. But other than that, the league is a little bit down, right? So if they're going to trade that in to go a bigger conference, they're probably going to be a lot less non-conference, play a tougher conference schedule. But they've kind of got their niche right now where it doesn't really matter what conference they're in because they're always going to be ranked in top 10. Not always, but if he keeps it going, ranked high up there. And he's a heck of a coach because he does it year in, year out.
Yeah. He does. His consistency is impressive. What was it? 5 straight Elite Eights that they'd been to, something along those lines. Well, Coach Brown, man, thanks a lot for joining us. This is a fun conversation. Let's try to do this again, maybe before the season starts, and we'll pick your brain about another topic. Thanks for jumping on with us. And man, what do you do for fun in Omaha? Like, what's your go-to in Omaha besides, you know, some, you going to go to the, do you go to the NCAA baseball, softball? Do you go to that?
So here's my thing. And I learned a long time ago in this business, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, where you're stretched thin, right? You're working a lot. You got a lot of different things going on. So early on, when I was a young whippersnapper, and I met my wife in college, and we got married at a young age, and we got our first child at a very early age. I realized you can't do it all, right? Like you cannot do it all. And back then I was playing softball leagues, and I'll play in a men's rec league, and I'll do guys poker night, and I would sign up for anything and everything to go out there and just be a man of the people, because I love dealing with people. And I remember my wife going, all right, that's about enough. Like, we got kids. Like, I got a daughter. Your job takes a lot of you. So I really kind of narrowed down to four basic food groups I kind of live in right now. She lets me work, and I appreciate that she lets me put food on the table. All right. She lets me go to church, and I, you know, to spend time in the, you know, with the good
that's
Lord.
That's a good right? thing. It's a win-win.
Absolutely. I get to do family time, right? Because so that's my thing. So I'm not in church. I'm not at work. I'm with the family. And then if I'm really good and I stay in my four food groups, she lets me golf.
Yeah.
And so that is my one thing that if I got a booster or anything like that, or if I can hit the golf ball around, that's kind of the one thing that I really like to do. I don't play pickup. I don't do poker night. I don't do men's leagues. If I'm going to a sporting event, my family's coming with me.
Right.
Because my job is just so demanding with all the travel that I have that when I'm home, I'm in the basement right now. I'm like,
well,
hey,
she let you be crazy and do a little church league softball for a few years. You can't complain.
You know what? The one time she did was we moved it back to Tulsa, and she this is a true story, man. She wanted to make friends, and she goes, guess what? You're playing in men's league basketball this year. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, you're playing in men's league basketball this year because I got to meet some people, and I'm figuring it out in church. So sign up for the church league and get out there and get after it. And so I signed up for the men's league, and she met friends with men's.
Funny story. I've got several friends who have taken different jobs over the years and had moved around the country. And they one thing they talk about is, you know, for the spouse, it can be difficult to get an anchor in the community, right?
Yep.
Besides just going to your basketball games or, you know, church if they're involved with that. So yeah, that hopefully that you, being the former D1 guy who was dropping 49 in church league, right? She picked a few friends along the way, and you got the MVP trophy.
I was trying
out there taking charges.
No, I'm 6'9", and I played the post my whole time in college. I transitioned to two guard when I played.
I got you. You just run arc to arc.
That's it. That's what I do now.
All right, Coach. Well, hey, thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go with, I'll say San Diego State, but their shot selection concerns me at times.
Especially last game.
Oh my gosh. I'll just take the winner of the UConn Miami game to win. I'll go Larinaga. We'll go.
Oh,
Miami.
I like it. It's a good
call. I mean, hey, the guys are making $2.2 million. They better put something together.
If they do, you know what? I give him a lot of credit because he did a great job getting ahead of
the curve. To be this late in his coaching career, to be able to change and go with the flow, and some people can't do it, that says a lot about him and the staff he's surrounded himself with as well. So, all right, Coach, I'm going to get out of here. Man, let's stay connected. Thanks a lot.
Matthew, hey, thank you so much for having me. Let's stay in touch. If you ever need anything, please give me a shout. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.